Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, Talks between Narad and King Prachina Barhi. Text 6. Sakhaya Indriyagana Jnanam Karma Chayat Kritam Sakhyastad Vrittayah Pranah Panchavrittiryathoragah. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation: the five working senses and the five senses that acquire knowledge are all male friends of Puranjani. The living entity is assisted by these senses in acquiring knowledge and engaging in activity. The engagements of the senses are known as girlfriends, and the serpent, which was described as having five heads, is the life air acting within the five circulatory processes. Purport: Krishna Bahirmukha Hana Bhoga Vansha Kare Nikatastha Maya Tare Japatiya Dhare. Prema Vivarta 6.2. Because of his desire to enjoy the material world, the living entity is dressed with material gross and subtle bodies. Thus he is given a chance to enjoy the senses. The senses are therefore the instruments for enjoying the material world. Consequently, the senses have been described as friends. Sometimes, because of too much sinful activity, the living entity does not get a gross material body, but hovers on the spiritual, on the subtle platform. This is called ghostly life. Because of his not possessing a gross body, he creates a great deal of trouble in his subtle body. Thus, the presence of a ghost is horrible for those who are living in the gross body. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Ukramantam sthitam vapi bhunjanam vagunanvitam vimudhananu pashyanti pashyanti jnana chakshushaha. The foolish cannot understand how a living entity can quit his body, nor can they understand what sort of body he enjoys under the spell of the modes of nature. But those whose eyes are trained in knowledge can see all this. Bhagavad Gita chapter 15 text 10. The living entities are merged into the air of life, which acts in different ways for circulation. There is prana, apana, udana, vyana, and samana. And because the life air functions in this fivefold way, it is compared to the five-hooded serpent. The soul passes through the kundalini chakra like a serpent crawling on the ground. The life air is compared to uraga, the serpent. Panchavritti is the desire to satisfy the senses attracted by five sense objects, namely form, taste, sound, smell, and touch. Translation, kindly repeat. Hare Krishna. So I'm very happy to be back here in Radha Gopinath Mandir. Narad Muni is explaining the purport of the allegorical story of King Puranjan. It's a very, very deep story, and only someone like Narad Muni could have given such a detailed story explaining all the intricate points of Sankhya philosophy. King Prachina Barhi, his intelligence having been dulled by too much of fruitive activity, has not been able to comprehend the full purport of the story. So he has asked for clarification. Please explain what you really mean by this story. And in this chapter, Narad Muni is explaining what the individual items in that story really mean. He has explained that Puranjan means the enjoyer, the soul. Avijñāta means the super soul, the Lord who is in the heart and who is unknown to the soul who is engrossed in sense gratification. And Pramāda means the faulty, contaminated intelligence. And now in this verse, he is talking about the 10 male friends of Puranjani who are constantly with her, along with their wives, and also the bodyguard who is the five-headed snake. Narad Muni explains that these 10 male friends are the 10 indriyas or the 10 senses who are like sakhas or friends. Sakhaya indriya gana. So the indriyas are the 10 friends, the male friends. Sakha is the masculine. And what are they? Jnanam karma cha yatkritam. So jnana indriyas and the karma indriyas. Jnana indriya, karma indriya. The jnana indriyas are those 5 senses by which we acquire jnana or knowledge of the world around us. The eyes, the nose, the tongue, the ears and the skin. And the karmendriyas, the organs of action, the hands, legs, anus, genitals and the voice. So in this way, the jnanendriyas and the karmendriyas combine together to form a mechanism by which the individual living entity entrapped in this body is able to interact with the world outside. By the jnanendriyas, he perceives the world around him. By the mind, he desires something. With the use of the intelligence, he activates the karmendriyas, the organs of action, to fulfill those desires. And this is the way the chain goes on. The wives of these male friends, who are the senses, are of course the desires. Earlier, Narad Muni has explained in the story several chapters ago that each of these male friends has hundreds of wives. In other words, each of the senses has hundreds of desires. There are unlimited sensual desires that arise in the material mind of the living entity having come in contact with material nature. So therefore, these are very, very powerful because they have so many engagements, panchavrittihi, tadvittayaha, that their engagements are in all these variegated sense objects of the world. So there are the sense desires. Above the sense desires, there are the senses. This above the senses, there is the mind, about whom we'll be hearing in the next verse. Above the mind there is the intelligence, above the intelligence there is a soul, and above the soul there is a super soul. So this is the mechanism that Lord Krishna has created here. The Upanishads describe the wonderful pictorial description of the chariot of the body, where the chariot represents the cross body. Of course, it's actually a very detailed description again, with the spokes of the wheel and the wheels and so on, all representing different facets of the material body. But in general, the chariot is the body. The passenger represents the soul. The driver represents the intelligence. The reins represent the mind. The senses represent the horses represent the senses. And what the horses see, which makes them run here and there, represent the sense objects, the tanmatras. The tanmatras, of course, are what make the senses go mad, go here and there, The eyes are always after form. They want to see beautiful form. The ears always want to hear some beautiful melodious sounds. The nose wants to always smell pleasant smells, fragrance. The tongue wants to taste palatable objects. The skin wants to taste something that touch something that is soft and pleasant to the touch. So all the senses are seeking contact with the sense objects. That is actually the way that material world becomes pleasurable for the living entity. It's only a contact, it's a question of contact between the senses and the sense objects. Yahi samsparsha jabhoga dukkhayo nayevati. So samsparsha, sparsha, touch. Each sense is attempting to contact a particular sense object. And this struggle is called happiness. The success in this struggle is called happiness. When we eventually attain some pleasurable contact, then it's called happiness. And when that contact results in something unpleasant, then it's called distress. So the whole game in this material world, if it were to be analyzed in just one sentence, it would be the struggle to make the contact of the senses with the sense objects favorable, pleasurable. That's all there is. But unfortunately, this process of bhoga is dukkha yonaya. It's simply a source of misery. Nothing else can come out of it. Yan maithunadi griha medhi sukham hituccham kanduyanena karayor eva dukkha dukkham. Kanduyanena karayor, kara means our, karayor dual case, our hands, kanduyana when we scratch or itch, rub each other. That is yan maithuna adi, all the sense pleasures of this world, especially that of maithuna, sex life, which is most prominent. Griha medhi sukham hi tuccham. It is very tuccha, very insignificant, this so-called happiness that is sought after by those whose consciousness is simply engaged in the things of this world. And because of this, the happiness that comes out, tripyanti neha kripana bahu dukkha bhajaha, tripyanta na iha, one never gets satisfied. But nevertheless, those who are small-minded, petty-minded, kripana, they're always running after this, not realizing that which comes out of the contact of the senses with the sense objects, bahu dukkha bhaja, is always a source of suffering. Kandu tivan manasjam vishaheta dhiraha. So one who is able to tolerate this itching, which is manasijam, ja means being born, manasi means from the mind. So this itching sensation is simply born from the mind. It's a concoction of the mind. Manorathe nasati dhavato bahi. And if one is able to simply tolerate that itch, which is born from the mind, concoction of the mind, vishaheta, then one can become sober. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. Manogatan is again, if one can tolerate that which is generated by the mind, so the mind is a fertile ground for all kinds of concoctions. We generally think that if somebody has delirium or is in some hysteria in very high fever, 107, then the person daydreams, has all kinds of concoctions. Many times we have seen old people who imagine all kinds of funny things. One time I remember an old person who was senile, was thinking that a big elephant was coming from a small hole in the wall. So we tend to think, oh, poor thing is just delirium. It's something coming from the mind. Just craziness of the mind because of old age. But actually, every one of us is in a similar position. Whatever we are all seeking in this world is all a process of delirium. It's a person speaking feverishly, babbling feverishly. imagining things out of mental concoction. So this whole world is a world of mental concoction. How we are constructing the world in our mind. The material world is nothing but a construction of the mind. So then the question may be asked, that does the universe or the mind, the material world not exist? It certainly exists. But the very purpose for its existence is that the material mind is constructing its various forms and names, nama rupa, for the purpose of its enjoyment. And therefore the material world serves like a fantasy world. We have so many advertisements you see of a fantasy world. Already we are living sufficiently in a fantasy. To increase the fantasy is pointless. So the mind, the senses together by the combination, we are creating such a fantasy world. And all the senses are running after. And it is such a powerful urge, irrepressible, irresistible. Indriyanam hicharatam yan manona vidhiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayo navam ivambhasi. Indriyanam hicharatam, charatam, always roaming. Senses are roaming. Where do I find? The eyes are roaming, roaming. Where to find something nice to see? Some beautiful form. The ears are always roaming. Where to find a pleasant sound? Even as we sit in the class, sometimes we hear some nice music coming from outside and the ears are roaming, always goes out there. Although the spiritual sound vibration is coming here in the class, but the ear is roaming. The physical ear is here. But the subtle ear, the sense of hearing, is actually roaming everywhere. It is not the ear that is hearing. It is the sense of hearing, the subtle sense, that actually senses that, contacts that sound vibration, sends it to the mind, which perceives it as pleasing or unpleasing, analyzed by the intelligence, and further action is processed in the brain, in the gross part of the brain, and then one acts accordingly. Then one's mind may be torn away from the Bhagavatam class onto the other sound vibrations. So all the senses are roaming, moving here and there. Indriyanam hi charatam. Yan manaha anuvidhiyate. But if the manaha or the mind focuses on that, concentrates on that, then what happens? Tadasya harati prajnam. Prajnam means the intelligence. Harati, haradhatu, that which takes away. So that intelligence will be taken away by the senses, kidnapped. So the senses are constantly being assaulted by various sense objects. But the key is to not focus the mind on it. We can see many times when our mind is concentrated on something, we don't notice things around us. For example, now, if you look and notice the fans, we will hear, there is a sound here. But the moment we get absorbed in something else, either the class or the darshan, or perhaps something in our own mind, some thought process, then we don't notice the whirring of the fan. So it's not that the sound has ceased. It's not that these senses are not perceiving that sound. The sense objects are there. It is an audible sound. The senses are perceiving it. But the mind is not focusing on it. Because the mind is now focused elsewhere. So therefore, our mind is blocked off from this sound vibration. In the same way, during our japa also, we should try to focus the mind completely on hearing the sound vibration. Otherwise, the mind will be swept away. So this very powerful urge to contact the senses, the sense objects, the tanmatras, causes ultimately the destruction of the living entity and his bondage in the cycle of birth and death. Srila Prabhupada used to give the beautiful analogy of how these five processes of contact of the senses with the sense objects would cause death or destruction for different kinds of living entities in the material world. For example, the sense of sight. The eyes want to always see something nice and attractive. Prabhupada gave the example of the moth. The moth moves towards the fire, finding it very attractive, irresistible, little realizing that it is actually literally hurtling towards its death. It is attracted by the form, and then it rushes into the fire and dies. Similarly, the ears. We always want to hear something pleasant. The example of the deer is given in the Bhagavatam. The hunter plays a very melodious sound on the flute or some other instrument. The deer becomes attracted by that sound, comes close to where the hunter is, gets practically intoxicated and mesmerized by that sound, becomes immobile, and becomes very easy prey for the hunter. Then the sense of taste. The fisherman who puts a hook at the end of a string into the water also dangles a worm on that hook, which is Sunday feast for the fish. So the fish becomes very attracted, doesn't realize the danger that is there, opens its mouth and tries to grab that worm, and at that time the fisherman pulls the rod up, and that leads to the death of that fish. The sense of smell. There is a musk deer in the Himalayas, from whose body is secreted a chemical that is very priceless for its fragrance, and various kinds of perfumes and scents are made from it. Not understanding that this fragrance is coming from its own body, the deer rushes all over the forest, not finding the source of it, little realizing that actually it doesn't have to go anywhere, but the source is right there, on its own body. It ultimately runs and runs all over the forest and dies out of fatigue. Similarly, the sense of touch. The elephant is captured by the hunter by putting forward the temptation of the she-elephant, and in front of the she-elephant there is a big ditch which is covered by some grass, not seen to the elephant. Being attracted by the she-elephant, eager to have the touch of that other animal, the elephant rushes, only to fall headlong towards its death into the big ditch. So in this way we see that the senses and the sense objects are pairs, are combinations, which form the very basis of existence of this world. Inasmuch as these senses can be the cause of our destruction, they can also be the cause of our salvation. In fact, we have nothing else apart from our senses by which to achieve salvation. The various senses, for example, if they are focused in Krishna consciousness, then these very senses can become the pathway to perfection and to real happiness. Inasmuch as the senses otherwise engaged are causes of destruction. The eyes have to be used to see the beautiful form of Krishna. That is why Prabhupada gives so much emphasis on having gorgeously decorated deities. We see the difference between the deities in ISKCON temples and in other temples, even if they are built by some multi-billionaire industrialist and named after him. But when we go to those temples, the structure seems very grand, huge marble structures, huge gardens. But the deities themselves are so inadequately dressed and decorated. It's not, somehow just not attractive. But when we come to ISKCON temples, we see the beautiful deities, immediately the mind is attracted. One priest in the Srirangam temple was one time saying how, when people come to take darshan of Lord Ranganath, after having stood in the queue for a long time, having come, they have some strange conception that when they come in front of the Lord, they have to appear very spiritual, so they close their eyes as if in meditation. So the priest had some stick and he would beat them and tell them, "Open your eyes! This is not the time to close your eyes in some meditation. Feast your eyes now. Feast your eyes on the beautiful form of the Lord. You have stood for 1 hour in the queue to come here, and having come here, you want to close your eyes for this brief moment. Open your eyes and see the Lord, and feast your eyes on this. So the eyes are meant for feasting on the beautiful form of the Lord. Lavanya Saram. The ladies of Shukadev Goswami describes how the ladies of Mathura are seeing him in the end of the ninth canto. That he is Lavanya Saram. He is the essence of all beauty. Lavanya means beauty. So when we see the beautiful form of Krishna, then automatically the eyes become perfectly engaged. We all know the story of Dhanurdas, how he was purified. His eyes were only focused on his beautiful wife. But by the mercy of Ramanujacharya, then he saw the beautiful eyes of Ranganath and he became transformed. Thereafter his eyes would hanker only for the beautiful form of the Lord. Similarly, in the 10th canto also, there is the verse where the gopis speak. It's a very simple verse which I like quoting often, one of the favorite verses. When they are cursing the creator Brahma, and they are saying that the eyes are actually meant for seeing Krishna all the time. But actually the creator is so foolish that he has created these eyelashes and eyelids because of which one cannot see the Lord all the time. Atate yad bhavan ahani kananam trutir yugayate tvam apashyatam kutilakuntalam Shri Mukham Chate Jadaudikshatam Pakshma Kridrisham. Atati, when you go, Ahani in the daytime, Kananam in the forest, Bhavan, yourself, so the gopis are addressing Krishna, that when in the daytime you go into the forest, Atati yad bhavan ahani kananam. At that time, when we cannot see apashyatam, Shri Mukham Chate, your beautiful face with its curly locks of hair, then trutir yugayatam, the truti, which is a fraction of a second, seems like a whole yuga, very long time. And therefore, we curse kridrisham, the one who has created these eyes, that is Brahmaji, we curse him as being foolish. Jada udikshatam, he is jada. His mind is not, his intelligence is not advanced, because he does not understand that the purpose of the eyes is to see the Supreme Lord's beauty, Krishna's beauty. So in this way, when we focus our senses, all our senses, on the Supreme Lord, in one way or another, directly or indirectly, then the senses can become purified. Atah Shri Krishna Namadi na bhaved grahayam indriye sevon mukhe hi jivvado svayam eva spuratyadaha. By the process of serving or utilizing the senses in Krishna's service, one by one, all the senses can be purified. The sense of smell also. We see the Kumaras in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Tasyaravinda padaravinda nayanasya padaravinda kinjal kamishya tulasi. Because when the lotus feet, makaranda vayuhu, the breeze that was blowing and touching the lotus feet of the Lord who has lotus eyes, padaravinda nayanasya, and it mixed kinjal kamishra with the tulasi fragrance from there, sankshobham, it caused an agitation in the mind. Tanvoha chitta, although they were aksharajusham, they were attached to the impersonal Brahman, but this fragrance agitated their mind. And they became very much attached to the Supreme Lord. They became bhaktas after being Brahmavadis originally. All the senses in this way, even by tasting Krishna prasadam, one becomes freed from the desire to eat all other kinds of unpalatable foods which shouldn't be eaten. So this is the wonderful process that Krishna has given us to engage the senses in Krishna's service. The tongue has to be used to glorify the Lord and to eat Krishna prasadam. If the propensity to speak prajalpa, to speak about the things of this world, is engaged in speaking about Krishna, then automatically the tongue becomes purified. One loses the desire to glorify other things apart from Krishna and things connected to Krishna. The propensity to glorify is very much there in everyone. We want to glorify and be glorified. But because we don't know whom to glorify, therefore we glorify the people of this world. There is that Shubhashita, that, not Shubhashita really, it's just a shloka that we remember. Ushtranam vivaheshu gardabhena patijayate. That there was some Ushtranam, that is some camels, two camels, and vivaheshu, there was a marriage, and for this marriage the donkey was also invited, because all the animals in the forest were invited. Gardabhena jayate. So even the donkey was invited for that. So what happened when the donkey came to the wedding of the camels? Parasparam prashansati aho rupam aho dhvanihi. So the donkey saw the camels and he started saying, oh, so beautiful, aho rupam. Both of you, bride and bridegroom, are looking so beautiful, so nice. It's a feast for the eyes. So the camels saw this and they heard this and they said, oh, aho dhvanihi, how beautifully you sing. Your voice is so melodious. It's so sonorous, so nice to hear. So in this way, people are just scratching each other's back in this material world. Aho rupam, aho dhvani is going on. We want to glorify, we want to praise everyone in this world. As the Bhagavatam says, those who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses, they glorify, they praise others who are also like that. So the tendency to use our tongue for all these other purposes can be purified simply by glorifying Krishna. Actually, the tongue is the cause of the biggest problem in the world, because people do not know how to control the tongue. They speak things which are not to be spoken, which hurt other people, which harm other people, which cause so many problems everywhere. If only the tongue could be used for glorifying Krishna, then automatically the world would be such a wonderful place. So here Narad Muni is explaining that these senses, the five working senses and the five knowledge acquiring senses, are engaged in activity, and the senses have their desires. There are so many numerous queens. And along with that, there is the uragaha, there is a serpent, panchavritti, representing the five life airs in which the atma is floating. And each of these panchaprana, they are responsible for the functioning of the different parts of the body, the different systems, circulatory systems, as Prabhupada says here. One prana is meant for the digestive system, one prana for the respiratory system, one prana for the circulatory system, one prana for the excretory system. So those who follow the Ashtanga Yoga process, they are expert in controlling the pranas. And they know exactly how to keep the pranas in the proper place, so as to maintain good health. Prabhupada mentions in the purport here that the soul passes through the Kundalini Chakra like a serpent crawling on the ground. This Kundalini Shakti is actually compressed at the bottom of the coccyx. Coccyx is the bottommost spinal bone. So the Kundalini Shakti, the Ojas Shakti, is there, coiled up like a snake, like a spring serpent form, coiled up. And when one practices celibacy and one practices so many other spiritual things, this energy is released and it moves slowly through the nadis and through the chakras. There are so many chakras are there, right from the bottom up to the top. And the Kundalini yogis, the Raja yogis and all these other yogis, they try to raise that ojas up to purify. And then they get all these experiences. We see so many institutions now where they try to propagate this kind of process. And it's extremely dangerous. Personally, I know of a couple of people who have gone mad, literally, in just trying to raise this Kundalini Shakti. And many others who even apparently successful, they also think that spiritual life means some experience that they get by raising the chakra up a little bit. And once the chakra is raised up and they don't know how to handle that Shakti, then they are in so many difficulties and problems. So people are actually so misguided now that this kind of process of trying to raise the Kundalini, etc., is very dangerous. Not recommended at all, especially in this age of Kali Yuga. It's like a whole typhoon, you're letting loose a hurricane and you don't know how to control it, you don't know what it is, you don't know what its power is, what it can do and what it can't do, and you just let loose that genie, open it up. But the process is to engage that Ojas Shakti, to channelize it into devotional service, to give us that highest ecstasy, that bliss. Ultimately, even that Kundalini Shakti is not really spiritual. It is just subtle. It is subtle material energy. The yogis use it to reach to some higher spiritual level. So the devotee of the Lord has no interest in such things. He is not interested in monitoring where the Kundalini Shakti has risen in his nadis and in his spinal cord. The Pancha Prana, he is only concerned that the pranas should be there, and so long as the pranas are in the body, this body is meant for serving Krishna. And one should be able to somehow remember Krishna even in the time when the pranas leave the body. Prana prayana samaye kafavata pittahi kantha varodhana smaranam kutaste. As King Kulashekhar has prayed, but when the prana leaves the body, extremely difficult period. The Upanishad described that the pranas leave the body, and at that time the body makes a sound like a creaking chariot. An old chariot that is creaking very much, making all kinds of strange noises. Ghura, ghura, ghura. The throat makes such noises. The eyes bulge. The kapha, vata, pitta, they accumulate in the throat. One becomes full of fear. One's senses become completely agitated. So in that condition, the prana leaves the body. So if one trains oneself to think of Krishna in all conditions, then the prana will depart from the body in a peaceful way. And one will be able to remember Krishna even at that very, very difficult time. So this is how Narad Muni is explaining the purport of the 10 male friends of Puranjani, who is the queen of Puranjana, the contaminated intelligence, and also the serpent who represents the pranas. So thank you very much. We have run out of time. Are there any comments or questions?
ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय। श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ की जय।